You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
阅读科技旅行，生活可以很大，对话设计学习，思考不嫌太多。这里是 iTunes 获奖播客《狗熊有话说》，一听就停不下来的哦。Hello， 你好，这里是独立知识型脱口秀《狗熊有话说》（Bear Talk）， 我是大狗熊。今天这期节目呢是 Bear Academy 英文播客的第三期。那么和以往几期一样，我在 Bear Talk《狗熊有话说》这个播客里面呢，会把这期英文节目放在后面，在前面呢会讲一讲它的这个大概的概述，如果你感兴趣的话呢，可以继续收听这期节目啊。我采访了一个非常有意思的南非设计师。那么他的有意思之处在于他的故事。如果大家有听到过上两期 Bear Academy 的英文播客节目的话，会知道我在上两期呢采访了两位不同领域的设计师，一位呢 Product Designer。产品设计师人在澳洲，那另外一位呢是设计界的业界领袖 Jeff Gottlieb， 那么都非常的有洞见。但今天我们采访的这一位叫做 Peter 的设计师呢，他的特别之处在于他的故事。那么你想象一下呀，你是一位从南非来到一个异乡，准备在新的国家新西兰发展的设计师， OK，那么举家带口来到了这里，经过很多面试，然后一些求职啊什么的，我们都比较熟悉的这个段落就不多说了。找了一份一个面试进了两三轮，基本上感觉已经差不多了。OK， 但因为你是用旅游签证啊 ，visit visa 进的新西兰，所以按照这个移民局的要求呢，三个月以后呢你的签证就过期了，所以呢必须要出境一下然后再回来。那么很多家人在新西兰的朋友，那家人在国内的人在新西兰工作的朋友可能会有这样的经历啊，比如说你的父母来探亲，那么来了三个月可能得出去一趟啊。我之前这个家人来的话就是有这样的情况，所以我们去澳洲玩了一趟又回来。那么这位叫做 Peter 的设计师，他也面对同样的问题，签证快要到期。那么作为给家人的这个慰劳，也作为为了续签呢，他们就去了离新西兰最近的国家斐济。那个时候呢大概在三月中旬，新冠疫情呢已经开始出现，而且已经有传闻说可能新西兰要对边境采取一定的动作， OK， 可能是准备封锁边境。那么这位哥们呢他也咨询了一些专业的人士，都说应该没有那么快， OK， 那么就定了一个三天的这个旅行的行程，去斐济热带小岛去旅行一趟。结果呢他们 在这趟旅行的中途，新西兰突然宣布封锁边境，第二天当天午夜这个禁令生效，那么他们来不及从斐济回到新西兰，于是呢全家人一家四口啊，他和他老婆还有两个孩子都被困在了斐济这座热带小岛上。我后面再说呀，我后面自己也有想过说这个事儿如果是发生在自己身上，很多人可能会在梦想说我的这辈子的最大的职业状态、职业追求梦想，就是在三四十岁的时候就能退休，去到一个热带小岛上，天天吃喝玩乐啊，这个退休，提前退休啊，那个在热带岛屿上生活。Peter 呢，梦想成真了，但是一种意料之外的方式。所以这期节目呢，叫做《困在小岛上的设计师》，就是讲他的故事。那么更多呢，其实也是因为我最初在 LinkedIn 上有和他互相关注，那么简单的有一些互动啊。另外呢，因为在我在奥克兰算设计比较活跃的华人设计师吧，就是在这个社交媒体上，那么会有一些人知道，那么也会互相关注。那么有一天我是看到了他的这条贴，他写了一句话说，Nearly 6 months later and we still stuck in Fiji。 那这句话就打动我了，他说六个月之后我们还困在斐济，然后说这是一次这个非常难忘的这个旅行啊，一次这个生活经验，和我的家人在这个小岛上和然后在这里呢可以交到新的朋友，但是呢也有很多很多这个即将到来的挑战。那么新西兰呢已经将这个边境的禁令呢已经发布，而且呢我们现在呢虽然是很焦急的希望能够回来，但是暂时还回不来。在三月底的时候呢，我收到了一封这个offer， 就是工作的这个 offer， 那么是来自奥克兰的 offer， 但是呢非常不幸，他们不能够为我继续保留下去，那我还困在这里。那么后面呢曾经是个人的一个业余爱好，就是做一些这个 freelance 这个自由设计，这个本来是一个业余爱好，现在变成了我的主业。那么我成立了一个设计工作室，叫做 Shine Up Studio， 然后呢现在在网络上已经正式建立了，然后也欢迎大家能够去看看，然后呢给我发一点这个相应的，如果有工作机会推荐啊，如果有客户推荐啊，谢谢啊。大概发了一段这样的话，那么我马上就被这个故事打动了，因为它离我那么的近，也和我的生活经历呢会有一些交集，然后也让我在想，如果是我，如果是你碰到这样的这个经历，你会怎么去面对？你怎么把生活抛给你的柠檬，变成柠檬汁，变成这个 OK， 变成这个甜的东西，再返还回去呢？所以呢，有了今天这期节目。那么，如果你感兴趣的话，如果你对 Peter 和他家人的故事，他在斐济如何这个在热带小岛继续做自己的设计的这个经历感兴趣的话，请继续收听这期播客《困在小岛的设计师》。
Hello and welcome to Bear Academy Podcast. Here we talk things about design, productivity, and technology. I'm your host, Bear, a UX designer who lives in Auckland, New Zealand.Imagine you just moved to a new country with your family, and after a few intense weeks of job searching, you decided to take a break. You, your partner, and two kids went to a tropical island for a 3-night trip. Everything looks awesome, at least at the beginning. You got a phone call, which told you that you've got a job offer. Yay! Then,You got another phone call to tell you, you need to fly back ASAP as the border is going to close at midnight. You couldn't do that as it was the late afternoon and there was no flight back. As a result, you are stuck on the island, not a few days, not a few weeks, but nearly 9 months. How about that? Hey, this is Bear at Bear Academy podcast. Few months ago, I read a post from a designer I followed on LinkedIn. That was his true story. Peter Atchison is a digital product designer from South Africa. She went to Auckland with family on job searching, got an offer just as a normal immigrant story. And then he needed to leave the country to renew their visas. And then they chose the nearest country, Fiji, to go. And now he's living in Fiji for 8 months and founded a design studio on the island. In this episode of Bear Academy podcast, I invited Peter to share his story and how he coped with the situation in different ways. When life gives you lemons, make lemonade remotely.
So Pete, before we start, could you introduce a little bit about yourself, like briefly who you are and yeah, what do you do, things like that?
Yeah, sure, Bear. Thanks very much for having me, introducing me. I'm Peter Atchison. I'm originally from South Africa and I have a wife and two kids. My wife's name is Tamar and I have a little boy named Eli, he's 8, and I have a little girl named Ari, and she's nearly 6. And I'm a graphic designer. I've been working in graphic design for over 15 years, and my family decided late in 2019 that we would go on a bit of a journey and just to kind of explore new horizons, really. And we took an opportunity to head off to New Zealand and just the way things worked out, and I think it was mainly just due to timing and this with COVID, we found ourselves out here in Fiji and unexpectedly here for a longer period than we had planned. So that's just a brief introduction of where we're at.
Thanks, Pete. I think no matter who's all listening after this brief, like what? you're trapped in Fiji and what is happening? Actually, that's the reason I'm reaching out, one of the reasons, because I'm reaching out to you for this podcast. The first one is that we follow up each other on LinkedIn, and also I saw some posts that you shared about design, which I really like, and some insights. So yeah, this is one reason we can talk about design in the later part. But the first reason, actually the major reason, is that around 2 months ago I read one of your posts. Actually, I take a note on my Notion, and let me just read it out loud so that everyone can listen. So Pete said, nearly 6 months later and we are still stuck in Fiji. It's been a fascinating experience living on an island and making new friends with these amazing people, but we have many challenges ahead. New Zealand had literally got their walls up and were anxiously waiting for return. At the end of March, I received an offer to work in an amazing company in Auckland, but unfortunately they have to be not able to hold out for me. So, and then there will be some later part. But the first time when I read this post, I said, what? So this poor guy with his family went to Fiji for a holiday and trapped there. This is what I'm thinking. So could you let us know what happened and how did this happen? Like with some details.
Right. Oh my gosh, yeah. Basically, we traveled to New Zealand and we had multiple entry visitors visas for New Zealand. So that only allows us to really stay in the country for 3 months at a time. But it does allow you to look for work and apply for jobs. But as long as you renew your entry, so by going out of the country and returning, you know. And I've known about this way of sort of finding work in Fiji from other people. And because I have my sister who's been in New Zealand for a couple of years, we had an opportunity to come over there and stay with her and explore these options, you know. Basically we arrived in New Zealand in December 2019 and spent a lovely Christmas with my sister, and the whole family was together. And I started with the job hunting and recruitment process. Little did I know that Auckland sort of went quiet over December. I couldn't believe how dead it was, and especially in the recruitment field. But things started to pick up towards the end of January and February and that. And I got some interest and went for a number of interviews and some really interesting companies and places I would love to work. And I got one lead with a really amazing company. I'm not sure if I should mention who they are, but in any case, they're in Auckland and they've got an international digital product. And it was really exciting to me. The technical side of it really intrigued me. But in any case, I went through the process, and that included the initial interviews, doing a test, a sort of a design test that I did at home and submitted to them, presented to them. And then following with a few days of work experience. And it was in the last days of that work experience that I realized that, well, we knew this was coming for a while, but we had to do this trip, you know, to renew our visas. And I had a feeling that I was close to receiving the job offer. So I thought, okay, well, you know, Let's pick the nearest place we can go to get out of the country and come back, you know, and have a short break before I really get stuck into applying for a work visa and settling into work and all that. So we picked Fiji, and everything seemed to be on track. I had spoken to New Zealand immigration, as well as, you know, the travel agents and even Fiji immigration, just about traveling at the time, because COVID was just starting to kind of get a bit worrying. And they all kind of reassured me that it was okay to travel for 3 nights, and you know, we understood that we could get back to New Zealand without any problems. But we arrived in Fiji and were staying at the lovely Sofitel. And the very next day, I was delighted to get correspondence from the recruiter to say that I'd received the job offer for the job that I'd been recruited for. And I was very excited about that. But not long after that, I got a call from my sister saying, you guys have got to get back to New Zealand ASAP because they're about to shut the borders at midnight. And we literally didn't know what to do. We were stressing, and we couldn't get a flight back before midnight. It was already into the afternoon. And we just really didn't know what was going to come of this. And we spoke to other guests around the resort, and some of them you could see were also trying to scramble and get out of there. And others were just like, no, we'll find a way, you know, it's no big deal, whatever. And yeah, unfortunately for us, we didn't really have much of an option. So we just said, okay, well, we're going to hang in there and see how things go. But unfortunately, the reality hit, and there was no chance that we were going to be able to depart Fiji and return back to New Zealand.
Wow, that's I just can't imagine, like, it happened on the same day that the first call you got is an job offer call, which just bring you to the top of the world, and then second call is that something's gonna happen and you need to go back as soon as possible. So yeah, and especially thinking about with family to hear those news together, and also like you mentioned that immigrate and the authority got you the insurance that it will not happen like this. So before, I think that's really dramatic and something I think is really not a good experience to hear. Like somebody assure you that it won't happen, but it happened like this. And especially thinking about just 3 nights, right? It's you originally planned to have a 3 nights trip, and now you stay in Fiji for around 7 months, 6-7 months.
Yeah, I think it's probably close to 8 months now.
Wow.
Yeah, and like you say, Bear, that was the really frustrating part for us, and it's something that we've tried to like appeal against, is that sort of the advice that they gave us was that it was safe to travel, you know, and knowing that we have young kids here, it was very unknown to us coming to Fiji. We had never been here before. We didn't know what to expect. And also we didn't have a big budget to be stuck in Fiji. You know, we couldn't afford to stay in hotels. So we appealed to, Immigration New Zealand have a system for applying for a special purpose to return to New Zealand. And we've applied over, seven or eight times, and we've been declined every time. And, you know, most of that has been on humanitarian reasons. And we've tried to plead our case that, you know, all of the above reasons and the stress and trauma that it's caused my family, it's been difficult to accept that it seems like it's fallen on deaf ears. And they seem to have put us in a category of all migrants that have left the country and stuck outside the country. There's no particular empathy to our case, even though we're in Fiji and there's literally no risk of COVID here. You know, there wouldn't be any risk of us returning to New Zealand. And it's just been a hard pill to swallow.
Wow. And yeah, because I've heard some other stories about like immigrants or some people is during the applying the visa, and also got a lot of trouble because of the immigrants. So so that's I just feel those people just don't have some basic empathy and or just a little bit flexibility. So it should be not as hard as this. And that's something cannot change or just cannot change by ourselves. So probably it will be good to focus on the things you can control rather than complaint. Also, that's really important to just let them do the things in a better way, but it's probably in a long term and for everyone, who every individuals probably we will need to focus on our daily like what we can do to change it or to take the control. Yeah, so that should be a really hard experience at first, but how did you and your family cope with it? Like what did you do after that, and during this nine months, what did you do? Yeah. during this period?
Yeah. Well, I would say that we have been very blessed and very looked after by, or should I say, supported by friends and family who, in particular, my sister, who is in New Zealand, she has been an amazing support. And through her and her boss, who she works for, they had some contacts in Fiji on a an island resort. And while pretty much as the news broke that we were stuck, and I think they understood, you know, where we are at, and they realized that we couldn't really afford to stay in for an extended time in the Sofitel, for example, or we'd have to find some sort of alternative accommodation. My sister and her boss reached out to these guys at this island resort, and they offered to take us in, kind of almost like refugees. At the time, the resort was just about going into lockdown. So I think fortunately for us, they didn't have any guests here, and they had room to take us on. They had a little cottage here that they could put our family in, and we sort of had an agreement that I would help out in any way to support the island and what they needed to do to get through lockdown and get through the next few difficult months that they were facing. So yeah, we've been very fortunate to live on this beautiful island for this period of time, and we feel really blessed. I mean, my wife, when we came to Fiji and we arrived at Sofitel, you know, it's a beautiful hotel and all that, but it's not really what you picture in your mind about Fiji. It's, you don't have the beautiful stretches of white sand and crystal blue and turquoise oceans that you imagine. But then, like, her dreams were kind of fulfilled when we arrived at this beautiful island. So it's been a really incredible experience. You know, living with a small community of people, there's a handful of expats who have remained on the island, who work here and they continue to run it. And then there's the working staff and the laborers who continue to maintain the island. There's some construction going on, so there's a little bit going on, but it's really a small island with limited resources and people.
Yeah.
But it's been a great experience for my kids. Coming from like South Africa, where, you know, we were having some struggles there with just the environments in South Africa where the crime was increasing and all of that, and we didn't really have that much freedom, to now coming to a place like this where we have ultimate freedom and our kids can run wild and, you know, run around on the island and yeah, run along the beaches, and no issues at all.
Yeah, don't worry about the lions or other wild animals who are going to hurt, because on the island, should be safe. Yeah, that's the bright side.
Well, we have endured a cyclone, which we never experienced before, and a number of really mild earthquakes. So there's been a number of firsts for us over here. It's been really exciting. And like I said, we've just been like really looked after the whole time. We've never been fearful, and it's just been amazing.
Yeah. And how are the kids? Like, are they happy about this experience? Because do they feel like are they have local friends or at school, or how things go on their side?
Yeah, well, schooling is difficult. When we were in New Zealand, during that time, we actually enrolled them in school. And our intention was that I would be able to get a work visa and I would be able to keep the kids in school and we'd continue from there. And unfortunately that came to an abrupt end when we came over here. Fortunately, there are a couple of other kids here. There are a few families of the expats and they have some young kids. So our kids have had some other kids to play with in that. And in terms of schooling, at first we were just really relaxed about it and we said, okay, well, we'll just take this time to take a break. And, you know, my wife would find a few exercises, basically print things off Pinterest and do a few exercises with the kids. So we had no real like formal thing. But recently we've started to trying to get into more of a routine and taking on some formal training. We've subscribed to an online training service because we don't want the kids to fall back. And hopefully next year they won't have to like repeat the year or something like that, you know?
Yeah.
But they're happy. They miss New Zealand and they had friends and family in New Zealand as well. And getting into the school routine, which was really lovely there. But they've kind of adapted to this lifestyle. Kids are really resilient and they've been fine. Yeah.
Yeah. And sometimes I just feel so surprising that kids have better ability to get used to the environment and better to cope with it rather than the adults, you know. Sometimes I do find that, yes, it's really amazing. And yeah, it's great to hear that they love the environment and have fun with friends. And also because myself was also is also a little girl's dad, so I can imagine like how if it's a short term, like a few days or even a few weeks, that's all right. So just be flexible and let them have fun. But if it's lasting for like more than a few months, and you probably start to think, yeah, I need to do something to keep the momentum rather than just let it go for a whole year or for a few months, it's start to worry. And yeah, I can imagine. And for my wife, probably just a week, she will lose the control. like she will, yeah, she totally panic, like how things going. Yeah. And great to hear that. What's the hardest thing? What was the hardest thing for you to think like during this experience so far? What's the biggest challenge for this whole journey?
Well, I'd say the biggest challenge for us has been financially, because you know, I left a really good job in South Africa, and you know, I was earning well and I was really satisfied in my role. But we made the decision that this journey was to better our life, and it wasn't really about a financial thing. And in some ways, maybe it was a risk to not have a huge kind of emergency savings on board. But it cost us a lot to get to New Zealand and the whole process. And you know, being there for the first few months depleted a lot of our savings. So coming over to Fiji was almost like a last resort, and everything seemed to be aligned for the next steps, and we imagined that it would be seamless, you know, and we would be okay. COVID had other plans for us, and so we really had to Well, yeah, it was a real big wake up call, and we were put in this position where, you know, now I'm without work, I'm without an income, and how are we going to make this happen?
Yeah. Yeah, just can't imagine, like, if I have the same situation, what will I do? But I think people will have really potential, like ability or just a power to get over it. And it's sometimes we underestimate our ability sometimes, and just think, probably I can't do this, and I will never do this, or things like that. But actually, if you put on the situation and you find a way, and and after that, like a few years later, it will become a great story for kids and for other people to tell. But during the process, it probably seems an endless all the things are happening at the same time, and I just so impressed about what your experience of this experience, and I sometimes also put it on my head and think about it, what will I do, what if it happened on me, and how to cope with it. So probably so let me ask this what if question. So if you have the chance to do it again, but also it happened, and you need to stay at the island at Fiji for 9 months, maybe even more. So what will you do differently this time if you have another chance to do it from the beginning again?
It's a difficult question when you're kind of faced with the unknown. Like every day, you don't really know what the next day is going to bring. You know, I often think about what I would have done differently, and I go back to when we were in New Zealand and the decision to leave, and perhaps that was the stage where I should have been a bit more focused. But at the time, everything was so sort of confusing about the virus and the information we were getting from immigration. Like, we trusted that. We felt like we were following all the steps we needed to, and we still landed in this situation. I think the only, and you know, without having control of that, we landed in this situation. And if I have to think about how I would do things differently, it may be that I would just start with doing what I needed to do for my family sooner, in terms of that getting my business up and running and getting us a little bit more financially stable. I would have definitely done that sooner.
Correct me if I'm wrong, is it means that you probably would start your own business sooner, like before that it's probably just kind of side hustle or something you're doing for fun, or but if you have another chance, probably you can do something for yourself, like put a priority for that. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, initially coming over here, the kind of design work that I'm doing was like a side hustle, and but I don't think it took me some time to realize that could actually grow into something that could support my family, and that I could pull that together even while I'm over here in Fiji. That's something that I would probably have if I could do it again, I would have done it sooner, so that we wouldn't have to struggle this long. You know, maybe we would have been able to become more self-sufficient and you know, even be able to support ourselves with our own place, like living on the mainland, for example. Whereas here we're on an island, we sort of reliant on the island and their resources. If I'd done it sooner, we might be in a better position to be a bit more self-sufficient at this stage.
Right, that's great. Let's talk things about design, because as designers. So speaking of the previous role, you worked in South Africa as a graphic designer. And it's really impressive for like a 15-year experienced designer. Which industry did you work in? Like, what did you do for that role?
So I'll take you back a few steps. I mean, when I left college, when I studied graphic design, mm-hmm. I left college and, you know, a lot of the people were getting into advertising and all that, and I didn't really feel the draw into the advertising world. I don't know. I wasn't really sure what I was searching for. Right. But, I had an opportunity to work in a clothing, company, sort of branded apparel. And, I did that for about 7 years, and that was an interesting journey. I worked closely with fashion designers and working on menswear and doing sort of creative art working. But my role also extended to a bit of marketing and advertising materials, branding materials for new clothing brands, and a bit of digital work as well. So my role started evolving, and I started to have more an interest in the digital world, and I saw how limited clothing was becoming for me. And actually, by chance, I got a message from someone I knew who was a recruiter who was looking for someone. She mentioned she asked if I knew anyone that might be interested in this particular role, and I immediately jumped out of my seat and I said, "Yeah, me. This sounds just up my alley, you know." And I felt very lucky that I applied for this role, and I managed to get through all the stages of recruitment. And I landed myself this job at the company called Derivco in Durban. And they design and develop technology for micro gaming, one of the world's biggest suppliers of online gaming. And Derivco is an amazing company to work for. They really care for their people, and they grow people, and there's some amazing people working there that I learned so much from. I was blown away by the creative team that they had there, you know, consisting of, you know, illustrators and technical artists and 3D artists and, you know, all the great creative minds, art directors and creative directors. That just made up this amazing team who made these really, really cool games. So when I joined there, I found myself in the brand and marketing team. And we worked closely with the game designers. And we created mainly B2B marketing packs to go along with the online and mobile game releases. And these were used by casino operators to market the games.
So after the game was developed, then you you support marketing for all the materials and resources.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's right. So we had a little team of also talented people. Some of them talented in animation and copywriting and all that sorts, and we created this range of marketing materials to go along with the releases of these games. And it was a really exciting place to work. you know, there was definitely pressure and there was a big learning curve. But I enjoyed that thoroughly. And then a couple of years into working at the RIFCO, they underwent some changes and they kind of flipped things around a bit. And I was offered a role in a game design team for one of their products. And that to me was, it felt like the next step for me, and I really enjoyed it. I was involved in another team with guys that were our responsibility was to create games, both taking existing games and applying them to a new sort of platform, and also originating new games of our own, which was really exciting. So yeah, that was a really great experience.
Yeah, so which means that at first stage you were involved in the marketing stage after the game was developed. Yeah. But then in the second stage of your career as a designer, you've been involved in a game design team, so that you can like contribute design for the game is on the process. So that's super cool, because I also find that like some game design is totally something really complex and really involved with like psychology, user experience. So it should be really fun to work for a team, and also as a designer, that's always good to have some different experience from different roles. And then when you went to New Zealand, so did you also looking for similar roles like other game industry, or like general tech or innovation industry?
Yeah. So that was a bit of a realization for me when I came to New Zealand. Well, I had done a bit of research before I came over there, but then, you know, realizing that there wasn't this sort of gaming industry that I was used to. Not in the same kind of line existing in New Zealand. I mean, there are some gaming companies, but I think they're more different type of gaming. There's some amazing gaming companies actually in New Zealand, but not really the type that I was familiar with. I mean, the kind of games I was working with is casino slot games, you know. And I know there's a lot of that in Australia, and I guess I was just hoping that I would find some of that in New Zealand. I realized there wasn't much. I mean, I tried to reach out to other sort of casino kind of operators. I mean, there's the big Sky Casino, and I imagine that I might find a role there. But I think there just wasn't much scope for that. So my next step was to go down more of the UX path that I'd been exploring within game design. And I tried to solidify that kind of thinking and apply it to opportunities that I might have in New Zealand. And it was really challenging because, you know, I don't have a portfolio of work of UX design on other software applications and that sort of thing. It's my background has been rather specific, so it was really challenging to meet with people and try and show some common ground. At the same time, I think that I have a kind of a unique perspective on UX. And I always hoped that would be something that would shine and that they would see, they would see some potential.
Yeah, that definitely. Can I ask if you describe yourself, like if you describe your unique to like a potential employer, like or a stranger, what that will be like? like using a few sentences to describe what you're different from other UX designers. Is that something related to game or something? Because I'm just curious about that.
Well, I would say from my experience, it's a combination of brand and UX. And I've always enjoyed to see the bigger picture. So, you know, it's one thing to understand the end user as the person who's physically interacting with the particular application, but also to be able to understand how that product may be marketed, I think is another level of user experience that's beneficial. And I think if I had to go deeper, I could bring in some sort of game psychology into some of the work, but that would be more presented on depending on the opportunity, I think.
Yeah, that's great, because I can definitely see that you have much better previous experience as a graphic and game designer, which is something that quite different from other general designers, especially for UX designers, because normally when you talk about UX design, it's always related to UI, so which means if you have a visual design background, it will be a extra point, or sometimes it will be the major reason you got hired as a designer. But I think there's also a trend is happening, is that even for some serious product, some formal product, they are starting to involve like gamification and something to make it similar as playing game, like the experience. Because I don't have the experience of working in gaming industry, but in my guess is that they have really deep understanding about human psychology and cognition and all the things about how to learn and how to show a new concept and show them how to get used to it, and also how to make the progress. I think that's really, really helpful if you have those knowledge and skills.
Yeah.
To improve the current or new products. So no matter what kind of the product is, and back to what you mentioned, New Zealand is a really small market. Like, probably don't have exactly the same company you worked in South Africa. Because I struggled the same when I moved to New Zealand, and I used to do app developing in China. App design, and at that time we didn't call ourselves as a UX designer, probably more like a UI design or interaction design, so things like that. It's more about interface, but also some interaction. And when I moved to New Zealand, I started to refocus my career back to design and start to look for job opportunities, and find it's quite different from other places, even different from other like Western countries, according to what my research is. But then try to get used to it, and also take the find a better position about yourself, and also build a strategy. I think that is something also related to actually the job searching, or find like the career of ourselves is also in UX design. So ourselves is a product as well. So we need to sell ourselves to different customers, which means the employers. So that's quite interesting.
That's true.
Yeah,
that's true.
Right.
It's all about how you brand yourself, how you present yourself, and yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah. And yeah, well, actually when I did my portfolio and my CV, at that time I literally talked to the people who is going to read it, like my potential employers. That's kind of like a user research, like exactly. How long did you spend on this, and find most of them, yeah. Just because they are super busy, like all the hiring managers, just
yeah.
During the meetings probably they can pick up one or two CVs to go yeah, through yeah. it, and just trying to find, so that's the persona of them, and then you need to create your own like the format to attract their attention in 2 minutes of your CV, and then yeah, this is quite interesting, and yeah,
it's a real challenge.
Yeah, it's a real challenge. But I think you it depends on, because now you have an awesome story to share about this trapped in a tropical island and survive as a designer. So that's will always people will at least want to talk with you, to talk to you in person. So there could be much more interview opportunities than when I was finding jobs. I find even an interview opportunity is hard to find if you don't have any local experience. But I think you have much better story to share. And also another thing that I'm thinking is that working remotely could be the trend. It's already the trend, or already happening all around the world. And that's kind of like the bright side of COVID. And it was it accelerates the understanding of work remotely, like remote work, for at least 5 years or 10 years. For all the case of the world, and do you, like I know that you build your own studio for design, consulting, branding, like graphic design, UX design, and what do you think about remote work? Because probably now you gonna have a lot of clients or. Out of Fiji, right? So so all your clients probably are not in the Fiji at the moment. So what do you think about work remotely, and how do you think what we can do, or yeah, any comments and thoughts about this?
Yeah, I think the remote work has been fantastic. I really enjoyed connecting with people around the world. And it's been amazing at how, I wouldn't say easy, but how do you say responsive it is. When you reach out there, people respond and you can connect with people, you know, whether it's via LinkedIn or even via word of mouth, you know. It's just really amazing to connect with people across the world. And I've really enjoyed meeting people across the world and being able to do work for them, and you know, be able to make a difference to someone's company in the US or in Australia or something like that. That really means a lot to me. In terms of remote work, I think it's definitely exploded now. It's become a necessity. But I still feel like some companies may be not taking advantage of it that much. And like even with the job that I was offered, like I was really trying to push them to, you know, allow me to work remotely. And it was difficult, I guess, because there was a lot of factors, but you know, they already had been working remotely with because they had offices around the globe, and that I think the biggest challenge was just the domain knowledge and the onboarding that I had to go through. So they felt that it was more important that I was in the office, even though I had taken part in an online training schedule that they had set up for me. they just didn't, they weren't ready to take the next step to allow me to work remotely. And I feel like it was a bit of a missed opportunity, because I think I could have continued on with them and we could have just, you know, built our relationship. And I think I would have a lot to offer them, even though I'm stuck over in Fiji. So I think in times like that, I would like companies to be a little bit more open to taking on new people, and perhaps in even more technical roles. Like, I'm struggling at the moment where, like, I would like to be doing more technical and UX kind of work, and I feel like I'm a bit limited to graphic design, branding work, which, you know, I've done for years. So I'm hoping in the future that I can do more UX work while working remotely.
Yeah, that's actually a great topic for UX design, to work remotely. And back to your what you shared about the remote work experience, I think, sometimes it's just us, like individuals, are ready, but the companies, they are not ready, or they are not ready to make the step or make the change, probably just under the like the COVID pressure is not that intense as US companies or Australian companies, especially for New Zealand companies. Sometimes we don't have that culture here to regard remote work as a norm or as something something we can think about. And that's what I found, COVID really pushed it forward for a lot. And sometimes I do find probably for us, like designers and other professionals, the best strategy would be get yourself ready and improve all the skills to necessarily to work online. And UX design is a little bit tricky to work online, because something will be much easier to do it in person. But it's also like, I do think that nothing's impossible, because it should be worked. And also considering what is happening in US, a lot of companies are doing the same, like totally 100% remote. And UX designers, they used to like facilitate workshops in person, but now we need to do it online. And actually, after a few practice, you find it works fine. And also, I think we are all in the broadband, like the bandwidth is much better than a few years before, so which doesn't change a lot. And also, people get used to it, and now we're trying to take the advantage of it. I think that's really helpful. Like, just this week when I was working, we did a remotely design sprint workshop. So two guys in Australia, the facilitator in they are in Australia, and us in the office of Auckland. And there's another guy probably in Singapore or somewhere, but it's just like it works fine, and everyone share the drawing, sketches, send it immediately on the screen, and the facilitator can share, can walk through one by one, and we can vote online. So it's something like, now we get used to it, but if we think about like 5 years ago, it's impossible. Like, it's just like black magic. Nobody can think. Like, everyone can work online with a workshop, can vote, can do things like that. Yeah, that's just impossible a few years ago. But I think that's something we need to, like, as individuals, we need to get ready and be prepared. Probably reach out for some opportunities that some companies offer remote work experience, remote work opportunities, actually, that's what I was what I did during the second lockdown of Auckland, because at that time my previous role was disestablished, so I was redundant. I was laid off, and then during that time I was looking for a new job, but also I think, yeah, probably I need to find some other opportunities can put myself in a better position. Because if it happens again, like the third time or the fourth time, and then if my next employer, they are the performance is not good and the role was canceled again, and which means I was quite reactive, you know. So during May and June, I also try to find some remote opportunities. And currently I'm working one of my the second job I'm doing is for a UX bootcamp for as the mentor, as a teacher. Yes. So which I can provide some support for other students in US. So yeah, that's a 100% remote work. So probably that's something you can consider to do that, like, as the same.
Yeah,
do some search, job searching about remote work. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I've always enjoyed the remote working tools. There's so many new ones that are coming out and new ways of working. It's just makes it easier. I think the biggest challenge for me is having enough screens to work with, to visualize all the things at the same time, you know?
Yeah.
I think that's one of the most important things, just to have some decent screen real estate.
Yeah, especially as a designer, you know, there's never enough screens. Yeah.
Never enough screens.
Right. Speaking of tools, interesting. What are the major tools that you're using for work? No matter UX or graphic, what are the tools that you are using?
Well, I don't think I've been using anything really out of the ordinary. You know, I think I just like to really make the most of the tools that I know, and I feel like I'm still constantly learning about the tools that I use. I mean, that's basically just the Adobe suite. And I started out doing UX and UI design in XD. And I was always a strong believer in XD from when it came out. And I used to try and encourage people at my work to explore XD. A lot of them had been doing interface work in Illustrator, and mm-hmm. I saw the challenges that they had there. So I always believed in this way of working. The Adobe suite has been pretty faithful to me. And like I said, I like to really make the most of it and explore ways of working within that suite. I have explored working in Figma, and I've checked out Sketch, and you know, I feel like I could easily adapt to those if that was the requirements. Because I understand the way it works. But for me, like I said, Adobe Suite's been pretty faithful to me.
Yeah, that's actually what I'm thinking, is that if anyone has previous experience working in fashion or other industry related to graphic design, probably Adobe Suite will be the must have, or something pretty essential. And it does the great job on all different perspectives. So yeah. And also for me, it's probably the same. I use Adobe Suite a lot, but recently, like my previous two jobs are just focused on the digital product. So they require, Sketch, the common standard for all the designers are using, and I do like it. Like, it's quite light and easy to use. and Figma is my, for my personal project, I do find it's really helpful. Like if you want to build a landing page for yourself or portfolio or just an interface of an app, it's much easier and yeah. much faster. And also the design system is building in Figma, which is yeah. awesome. Yeah. Do you use any other like collaboration tools to share with designer or other like clients, business people? Like for example, like whiteboard tool, Miro or other tools?
At the moment, not so much, but in my past, in my previous position, I explored those options. The company I worked for was like quite a big company, so they weren't always open to introducing new technology because they had a lot of their own existing technology. Even though I might see benefits in products like Miro, and I'd use Miro and I'd used InVision, their free hands, and InVision have some really cool tools. And actually learned a lot about UX through InVision's blogs and all that.
Yep.
So I used to experiment with those tools, but none of them were really fully accepted. We used mainly, it was a lot of development focused. The work. So we would use our Confluence and Jira and those sort of things for our communication, collaboration, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
It's all tied into the, you know, project management system and all that. So yeah, there's always a push for design to represent their own tools.
Yeah, I think it feels like we need to chasing the latest tools, and it's always like after a few years there will be a new kids in town and you need to get used to learning something new, but some fundamental things will always the same, if a designer, color, typeface, all the things probably the same. And for UX, like people are always the same, so people doesn't change. That's great. So I don't want to take too much of your time, Pete. So probably just two last questions. I noticed that you created a studio, Shine Up Studio. So currently that's for all the design consulting service. Is there anything that you think the people who are listening might be interested, or is there something you want to talk about your studio?
Well, Shine Up Studio, thanks for asking. It's, you know, it really was my side hustle, which has become my main hustle. And it's been an interesting thing. Like I always, since I left college, I think I always had these dreams of running my own design studio or collaborating with a few other like-minded designers, you know, running, like a sort of collaboration. But I never really, I think I was always chasing my career and I never really took the steps to like brand myself or anything like that. And it was great to have this time to reflect while I've been out here. And really think about like what is my brand, and you know what I stand for, and what can I offer people? It was really good to have that time to think about this and put it together. And I like had my own project, my own brand, and I invested 100% of my time with specific goals in mind, and I really enjoy having that time and space to work on my own thing, and I feel like it has a close connection to me, and like I said before, I really just enjoy meeting people from around the world and being able to contribute to their business in some way. And I feel like some people, even if they have a small business or they're just starting out, they think that design is not accessible to them. Maybe it's too expensive or something. But I think there's always a way. And I think that's why little studios like this, like myself, are able to offer them solutions. Whether it's a small company or you have a bigger company and you need to fulfill some of your marketing needs, that kind of thing.
That's great. So if anyone who's listening in Auckland or anywhere of the world got interested about Peter's studio, just search on shineupstudio.com. So yeah, that will find details about this. And personally, I do think that's quite important for designer, no matter you're working in a company or agency, but would be good to start something just for yourself. No matter side hustle, a personal project, a side project or hobby or anything, but it will be good to invest some time on yourself, on the project you are interested in. And I know it's really hard for someone who's already working in a really fast-paced work. Chris, in that scenario, everyone's like, you probably just focus or don't have enough energy or attention to do something for yourself. But that's actually quite important, and will be. Always good in the long-term perspective. So if you invest on yourself, that will definitely get more return than you. So that's,
I agree. And, I think doing work on the side has always helped me in my career. Like even when I was working in the clothing industry, I knew how limited that kind of work was for my portfolio. So my side hustle was the thing that helped me do more digital work, you know, and do more brand and marketing work. And I think that was the thing that helped me reach my next role. I agree. It's definitely a good thing.
Right. Yeah. Speaking of the portfolio thing, improvement is also when you're working, when a designer working a large company, sometimes you find the design progress is moving quite not as we thought, sometimes quite slow. And as an individual designer or as a sole trader freelance designer, if it's just yourself, probably it's moving much faster, and it's so easy to push the progress. But it's also like it need to balance. If it's just a self project, you might lose yourself. Like you might lose the balance. Just 100% of the opinion from yourself. Probably also need to do some teamwork and research for that. So that's another great topic. Probably we can cover that in another call. But yeah, that's great for like Pete. That I'm really appreciate your time today, and impressed about your story and how you and your family just settled down in a really uncertain environment and without enough resource. That's really impressive, and I do believe that's a lot of people are interested about your story, but also will like they can see your personality and how you cope with this, so which can really as the benefit or as the if you can do this in your personal life, you probably can do better in the professional job environment. I think a lot of employers will think in this way, but also I really
looking forward to see your personal business is growing, and yeah, probably we can have some other chance to have a chat about some specific topics. And by the way, do you have any questions or anything you want to ask me? Sorry, I just keep it at the last part, but do you have anything you want to discuss or talk?
I think I also have some questions, and I'd love to talk to you more and further in detail, and it's probably for a call in the future, perhaps, Bear. I just also really want to thank you for reaching out to me. I think you're doing a great job at putting yourself out there and meeting new people, and I enjoy listening to your podcasts, and you know, I always love hearing about different companies and how they deal with their problems and all of that. I think you're doing great, and I'm really happy that I've met you. I hope to return to New Zealand and get my path back on track, and hopefully we can meet up and spend some time together, have a coffee or something.
Yeah, definitely. That's looking forward to meeting person, and like what I mentioned, if you have any questions or a specific topic, just send me a note and we can schedule another podcast to just go deep deep dive on those topics. Yeah, I'm happy to do that. And all the best to you, Pete, and for your to your family. Okay, and talk to you in the next one. Right, have a great is it afternoon in your Fiji?
Yeah, right. It's afternoon. I think we're just 1 hour behind. Behind you. Yeah, so I'm gonna go play some cricket now with the guys on the island. Enjoy my afternoon.
Ah, that's great. Yeah, I kind of keep my little one, so yeah, not that exciting, but still something I need to do.
all right man, cool. Well, enjoy, all the best to you and your family.
Yeah, thank you. You too, have a great evening. Bye, Pete.
You too. Cheers, bye-bye. Bye.
Thanks for listening to this far. What a story. The first reason I invited Peter to Bear Academy podcast is, what if? I just can't help thinking, what if it happens on me? I came from China with family. It was quite hard when I arrived a new country to start from scratch. I might visit my extended family in China this year and would not be able to come back either. How could I learn from Pete the strategy to cope with it? That's the first reason I invited Peter to join us to share his story. But after talking to Peter, I realized it actually happened on me, and it actually happened on every one of you already. I mean, everyone's life and work is impacted in 2020, more or less. As a designer who's trapped on a tropical island, Peter's story might be a little dramatic and a little bit extreme situation. He handled it in the best possible way. But what about us? What could you learn from his story? There's no risk-free solutions. I think the right strategy for us is to build a strong enough system to deal with uncertainties. It sounds like a design challenge. If you're listening to this far, I invite you to take this challenge. To imagine, how might I build a personal strategy to better cope with the situation if I'm in Peter's shoes? How could you design the shit out of this? That's a design challenge, probably will be very helpful that we can try and practice. I hope it will not happen on any one of you. Sorry, Pete, it already happened on you. But I do believe take this mental practice will help you get a better position
to deal with the uncertainties, especially in the year of 2020 and upcoming years. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed this one as I am. If you want to learn more, please check the show note at our website, podcast.bear.academy. If you are listening via Apple Podcasts, please leave a comment for it so there will be more people can find this show. If you feel like to share your story or to be the guest, please check the site for details. Bear Academy is a self-learning program providing courses on design, productivity, and career. If you are interested in start a design career, please check bear.academy for the free course and other useful info. Bear Academy Podcasts is my second podcast. And my first one, Bear Talk, started from 2012, which was Apple's Editor's Choice Award winner in 2013. It is also recommended by many Westerners as the best non-language learning podcast for Chinese learners. If you can speak Mandarin or on learning Mandarin, you should have a try. Check beartalking.com for details. This is Bear Academy Podcast, a podcast about design, productivity, and technology. I'm Bear. Thanks for listening. I'll talk to you soon in the next one. 再见。
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.